Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Discover the life-changing benefits of Meow Greens for your cat. Ever see your cat slowing down or having health issues and wonder, what can I do to make them better? Well, my friend, add Meow Greens to your cat's food for 90 days, and I guarantee you'll see changes that will amaze you. Greetings, I'm naturopathic Dr. Dennis Black, inventor of Meow Greens, and I invite you to take the Meow Greens 90-Day Challenge. In the first 30 days, you'll see shinier coats and increased energy. By day 60, your cat will have a stronger immune system, less shedding, improved joint function, all due to the live nutrients that you've added to their diet. And at 90 days, they're going to have better digestion, reduced inflammation, improved heart health, and you may even have reduced their cancer risk. Fetch a free Jumpstart trial bag for your cat today. Go to trymeowgreens.com. Use promo code TRYMEOW. That's try M-E-O-W. You discover the shipping. You don't have to change your cat's food to improve your cat's health. Just add a packet of Meow Greens.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Thursday, the 11th of April, 2019. On the podcast today, I have Aidan Bishop, founder of Big Dish. D-I-S-H is the ticker there. And Aidan discusses their second quarter technology development targets. Also on the podcast, Chris Jeffries, Chief Executive Officer of Dev Clever Holdings, DEV. And Chris explains the significance of launching their virtual reality core framework. Plus, Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com, talks about big caps, including Tesco's, WH Smith's, Ted Baker, Reckitt-Benckiser, Indivia, and Reynolds. Well, it's a small cap there, R&O, ticker there. Plus, as always, I have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs. By the way, you can see top 10 versions of both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk, where you'll also see a plethora of content there from some from Malky, from SP Angel, talking about high-tech economy transition will be underpinned by copper. Of course it will, yeah, lots of copper needed that. There's also an article on Dev Clever, which I chat to Chris, of course, the podcast, and Tuple, and lots of other stuff. I'm scrolling down, but you can do that. That's voxmarkets.co.uk.
Want to get live push notification alerts whenever a company you follow releases an RNS? Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is founder of Big Dish, D-I-S-H, ticker there. It's Aidan Bishop. Aidan, thanks for joining me.
You're welcome.
Now, you're updating the tech, or you've got some set some targets for the tech of Big Dish, because it is a food tech business. So before we get into that, explain what you do, please, Aidan.
Big Dish is pretty simple. It's all about a last-minute dining experience. So what we do is we allow restaurants to put excess inventory, which is tables, on the Big Dish platform and allow consumers to book a table up to 48 hours in advance. And every table booked through Big Dish has a discount associated with it of up to 50%.
Yeah, and I've mentioned this before. I like it because it's a no-brainer for both sides, really, isn't it? Both sides of the deal. It doesn't cost the consumer anything. It saves their money. And, of course, you've got restaurants there that are otherwise empty would be filling seats, and it costs them money to have just nobody sitting there eating their food. So it works. So what's happening? Where are you at the moment? And you've got these second-quarter technology development targets. Take us through what this is all about, if you could, Aidan.
Yeah, so one of the things, if you look at recent announcements that we've made, Sanj Nahar, the CEO, has been talking about how we're building this launch pad to rapidly expand around the UK. And there's three sort of pillars to that launch pad. And if I visualize it, on the left side of it would be restaurant acquisition, on the right side of it would be user acquisition, and right down the middle is technology development. So once we're at a point where we're satisfied that this launch pad is built, we're ready to push the button and go nationwide. And so today is really about setting the goals, setting our plans, and for what we want to achieve with the technology development in this in the second quarter.
Yeah. And take us through some of the bits and then what you'll be doing, what you hope to achieve, and in this quarter. And is it all done in the Far East, isn't it?
Yeah, it's all done out of our office in Manila, Philippines. We've got a tech team of about 8, and we're going to increase that. We've said, I think, 3 or 4 new hires that we're going to bring on so we can keep developing at a faster pace. I think one of the things to emphasize is that tech development never stops. You've got to constantly developing, you're constantly looking to improve, to optimize, and so it just never stops.
Yeah, absolutely. And just for people not aware, where are you hoping to be with this? I mean, because you have set other targets, but where are you hoping to be with this? Like, you know, and what are your targets operationally then, Aidan?
Well, look, I mean, today is really all about the tech. I mean, we've got a great app, and the app is really the core mm-hmm. part of our business. And so, some of the new features that we've been discussed today, it's all about being able to increase engagement. So, we're looking to bring review rankings feature yep. to Big Dish, and that allows users to have more engagement with the app. And then also we talked about having a new restaurant feature so that presents a marketing opportunity to present new restaurants to Big Dish users. We're also the one about sharing the dining experience. So when somebody books on Big Dish at the moment, the booking automatically goes on your online calendar. But now we want to go a step further and allow for that reservation to be shared with the people in a dining party. And it just amplifies the message of Big Dish. And so everything that we're doing around technology is towards promoting the user experience and to be amplifying the message of Big Dish. That's what we do.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? Because, I mean, that's the way. The best way of marketing in social media anyway, really, is via recommendation. If someone's using it and they recommend it, then it's going to work, isn't it? And you say you're expanding the team there? And
we've got 8 persons right now. We're going to add another 4 to that. No, I mean, I think the message the market is really wanting to hear is when are we going to push the button and go nationwide? And I get why people want that. Some people are rather impatient about that. But it's important to get it right. And I think as a business, it's quite important that you build a business with the goals in mind and you don't try to, you know, get ahead of yourself, or you don't try to do things just to sort of placate those that really are very short term in their way of thinking. So we're getting very, very close to that button, pushing that button very, very close. But I just want to make sure that everything is in place and that when we say, right, let's go, we can execute correctly.
Yeah, and I suppose, you know, like any model, you have to start and get it right on small scale first, then expand. And I mean, at the moment, are you in 3 cities at the moment? Is that right, I think?
4 at the moment. We're in 2 territories, 4 cities. And then we've already mentioned previously some new cities and a new territory we're going to go to. But look, it will, when we do push the button, it will be a rapid expansion. So that's where it's all progressing towards. And if people would look back at the tone of our RNSs and messages over the last couple of months, they would should be able to see that that's where it's all building up and leading to.
Yeah, absolutely. And marvellous stuff. Well, one final thing, Aidan, and you know the score here. If someone likes the sound of what you're doing and but are not following the story as yet, give them 3 quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, I think a good reason is that if somebody is listening today that you want to see Big Dish come into your area, you know, follow us. And it won't be long before we do expand around the UK. And my goal is to turn every Big Dish shareholder into a Big Dish user. So there we go. That's a couple of reasons in there.
Marvellous stuff, Aidan. Good to chat to you, fella. And like I say, lots going on there, lots of things. And the tech is constantly evolving. So no doubt we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much, fella.
Cheers, thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chris Jeffries, Chief Executive Officer of Dev Clever Holdings. DEV is the ticker there. Chris, thanks for joining me.
Hi, Justin. How are you? Nice to speak to you again.
Yeah, you too. I know you deal a lot in the virtual world, but I can almost hear the birds behind you in the real world there. Sounds like a nice scene.
Yeah, I'm actually away on a friend's wedding, if I'm honest with you.
Oh, nice. Okay, well, you're still working because your RNS is out. You've got news out today, and it's about the experience platform, the virtual reality core framework, and we'll get into that in a bit. But as always, Chris, you haven't been listed long, and there's been quite a bit of noise about you already and quite a bit of excitement. But for people not familiar with Dev Clever Holdings, can you explain what the business is about, please?
Yeah, of course, absolutely. So we're an innovation tech business. So we operate in three core channels, which we identify as educate, engage, and experience. And over the last 5 years, we have been developing products and platforms, our proprietary frameworks, if you will, in the background, where we've been working in collaboration with brands, retailers, colleges, employers, in order to reach a point which was January this year, where we had the platforms ready to be deployed and we could capitalize on three very clear marketplaces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So today you announced the experience platform virtual reality core framework. What does this mean? What is the significance of this then, Chris?
So if you remember from our last podcast, we went into quite a bit of detail about the individual products that we offer. Yeah. And from the outward looking inwards, they very much come across as three very distinct and different business models, which they are to a degree. Our core VR framework, which is why we refer to it as core framework, is the glue that binds all of our products together. Mm-hmm. And what we've been developing in the education sector in terms of a futuristic platform which revolutionizes the way we deliver careers information to school kids, and which is about getting them engaged in careers information and matching them to the exact right career using virtual reality. What we are now able to do is now extend that offering so that once a school child has kind of chosen their career, it's then been recorded through the Launchpad platform and it's met the government mandate required by schools, we're now able to extend that career journey through the core framework by offering employers, apprenticeship providers and the institutions the mechanism to deliver virtual reality e-learning and training modules to keep them career focused all the way through the journey, so when they finally reach the end point and they're employed in that future career. And then with our Engage platform, we can also introduce gamification to that cycle, which helps to keep the students on that career path and motivated to complete their training modules. It binds all of that system together and helps us link and cross-pollinate our offering from our other products and engines.
Yeah, well, do you know what? There's got to be a massive market in education. So for a long time, you know, we're at the stage right now where tech is, you know, just exploding. It's developing exponentially, and yet a lot of schools are still on the old curriculums and stuff. So there must be a lot of potential in the education field, mustn't there?
You'll be absolutely surprised with the overwhelming response we've had to our career platform and our virtual reality application, Victor, which we officially launched last week. I can say that over 50% of the schools that we've already engaged with have pre-subscribed to Victor, and we're now in quite advanced talks with careers funding bodies and agencies about potentially subsidising the cost of Victor to go into schools. And people really see the need for the educational advancement of careers information. I mean, just yesterday, the Educational Secretary announced the award of the new 12 institutes of technology across the country, again directly about bridging the skills gap in the country. So Dev Clever is at the heart of one of them applications, and so is Launchpad. So we have been working in this sector to deliver these products at just the right time to keep up with the demand of how education is going to change and how we're going to engage kids and young people all the way through from the start of their academic lives right through to that point where they get into their final career position. And the platforms and products as of today, when we've launched our core framework for VR, now provides that continuous platform which runs all the way through that journey. which is a huge exciting opportunity, both as a business of Dev Clever and all the different kind of aspects of how we can pull commercial opportunities from educators, employers, automotive manufacturers, all into one singular platform with a very focused outcome, which is to bridge the skills gap and deliver the information in an engaging way.
Yeah, cool. So, that part there you've mentioned a lot about educate there, because you've got three E's, isn't it? It's engage, educate,
yes.
Experience. So that's
right.
Take us through engage and who's that aimed at and how you earn money from that.
So with our Engage platform, it's a cloud-based gamification engine, which again enables us to fully control the distribution and allocation of consumer rewards and incentives. Mm-hmm. And in short, that means that a brand or a retailer or an operator can create a discount campaign where they say, if you purchase something from us, we'll give you the chance to win a reward rather than be given a low-value one. Which drives much more engagement, certainly from our experience in that sector. And the VR core framework on top of that now enables us to offer virtual reality brand experiences and consumer experiences where they can, using just a smartphone and a very inexpensive cardboard device, a cardboard headset, and they can now play and interact with very rich virtual reality games where they can win rewards and vouchers which are controlled by Engage, and they can then redeem them on the high street through our issue upon the network. So there is it's really a huge advancement in the way that brands and retailers can now engage with their customers to drive more foot traffic to the high street.
Yeah, and moving on to experience, is that just a fun element, just a gaming element of it, or what's that about?
So again, using the frameworks that we've developed, which are cross-platform, which again fundamentally means that you can use any different type of device with different from different products, whether it be a standalone VR or it be something like an Android phone or using the Google Play Store. It enables people to compete or collaborate in real time. So we have offering seasonally themed games, which we're able then to distribute through our Engage customers, i.e. high street retailers and leisure and hospitality facilities. But we're also very excited about the imminent launch of the first cross-platform version of Vanguard, which is our competitive space game, which will be launching on that framework really very soon. And then we'll also be expanding that later on into even a wider market, including PCs, direct mobile users, and consoles. And more games will follow that. So it really positions Dev Clever at the heart of all this. And with the platforms that we've already introduced now, we are already seeing just a huge uptake from our customers. And over the next 8 weeks, you'll see dozens of games coming out from major global brands and really embracing the fact that they can engage with customers in this new way.
Yeah, at the moment, like you say, you're still relatively new, listed, but your business has been running for a while. So which of those at the moment is gaining most traction commercially, would you say?
So commercially, our Engage platform is far more established because we've been offering and commercializing them games 4 or 5 years now. So we've been generating good revenue from them games for a long time. And now we've moved into the cloud-based infrastructure, which we were delivering. It means that we've been able to ramp up the amount of games we're delivering through that for our brand customers, and also extend the life of them games by offering the consumer new places they can redeem their rewards. So our current revenue lift is really coming from the Engage platform, but now with us pre-subscribing and offering our Engage platforms, that is very quickly starting to catch up.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. Well, one last thing to do, Chris, if someone's listening to this, likes the sound of what you're doing, but are not yet following the story, and of course, there's a massive market out there for VR, and especially, like I say, education, all that, massive. If they like the sound of that, but they're not following the story, give them three quick reasons, and I suppose you could say the three easy there, but three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Three quick reasons would be that our Engage product is a revolutionary customer engagement experience, which is seeing huge uptake from brands on a global level. Our experience product is a really exciting cross-platform framework where we're about to be launching some huge potential games in the competitive sector, and our Educate product is already in the marketplace at the time when the whole country is focused on it, and we're seeing huge overwhelming responses and uptake already.
Yeah, absolutely marvellous stuff. Chris, good to chat to you. Thanks for taking time out in the middle of a friend's wedding. And you're a CEO, so you're working hard all the time. So
that's how it is, isn't it?
Yeah, unfortunately. But listen, speak to you soon, and thanks a lot.
Thanks, Justin. Appreciate it.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com. You all right, Chris?
Yeah, very good, very good.
In fact, while I'm looking for you, I did look at you. I saw you talk about them yesterday on Twitter, or mention them, and the results are from Tesco. I wonder if they're up today, but it seems like that's a good turnaround story there. Well, probably the best results they've had since Dave has come in, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it probably is. I mean, you know, Tesco's, obviously, you go back 3-4 years, they were in a right bad place. Warnings, issues, accountancy problems, and whatever else. Tesco Dave, as I've called him, Dave Lewis, came in, he's turned it around, and to be honest, he's delivered on the plan. He had a 3-4 year plan, he's delivered on it. Now they've got to try and work out what they're going to do next for their next trick, if you like. But the shares responded well to, you know, what is, if you like, an old school sort of turnaround plan, which is basically focus on profitable growth. So they made the comment, I thought the best comment they made yesterday was nothing to do with continued like-for-like sales growth in the UK, but actually all to do with the fact that every single international market they operate in, they now do it profitably. And you go back to even the heydays of Terry Leahy, that was never the case. You know, international was always hope, something which was going to generate more profits to supplement the UK's largesse and brilliant positioning. So Tesco's have gone back to basics, that they've delivered on the plan. The shares have obviously crept up over the last year or two. And I think people are now saying, what's the next trick? And of course, the next trick is to work out where the company is going to, what the company is going to do into the 2020s. They've got a capital markets day in June in the retail centre that is known as Welwyn Garden City, which I'm sure is chosen because of the proximity to the Tesco headquarters. But anyway, they're going to talk in June about their next thoughts concerning cash flow and focus and whatever else. I'm a holder of the stock. I'll fully disclose that. I still like the company. And I have to say, despite all the issues out there, we still have to eat. Tesco's have got a good online offering, but more importantly, they've worked out what their strengths and weaknesses are versus the German discounters, and they focused on those. And obviously, that's what a sensible company does.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just reading now, I'm trying to figure out when, at what price Warren Buffett bought and sold, because I'm seeing here he lost apparently $444 million, one of his biggest losses ever. He started buying, apparently the earliest he bought was 2006. In 2012 he raised his stake to over 5% despite stock profit warnings, and then he sold $140 million of his $415 million in 2013. He said when he soured somewhat on the company as then management, but he started selling massively in 2014, I think. So, but I assume he's done better than him.
That's right. I mean, the shares did go lower. I mean, Buffett lost, as you say, a decent chunk of change. Nothing for him, but in the wider scheme of things, for everyone else, a huge chunk of change. But yeah, he bought not at the top, but relatively close to it.
Did, didn't he? Looking here. Well, yeah, going back with what he's saying, he bought pretty much a 480 top part of £4. And they've had a few bounces, but they basically ground down to 160 in 2016. So, well, in fact, he was selling in 2014. So I assume that downed him. Yeah, so he probably sold 480 down to 360. So, yeah.
Yes.
Well, do you know what? To be fair, it's good he got out then, because
That's right. I guess the lesson would be, it's at a certain level, it never is too late to sell if something's going really wrong. I guess, though, Buffett bought it on a different reason, because of course back in the pomp, Tesco's was going to roll out its brilliant model into the States and everything else, and obviously that patently didn't work, let alone in many other countries. As I say, they focus down now to being in countries where they believe they can be profitable, which is fewer countries, so the sales have taken a hit, but actually it's profitable sales they now do, and that's much more important in terms of margin and cash flow. So my personal view is I'm a happy holder of Tesco's here. I personally think it's going higher, but the clear catalyst is the June Capital Markets Day. If you don't hold them, wait until then, see what they say, and make your mind up.
Yeah, exactly. Mars, Tesco, what else is out today, Chris?
Well, got to start with WH Smith's, really. It's obviously a business we all know well. We probably pop into the stores and everything else now and again. But it's actually a business which might surprise a few people that well over 70% of the profits, and I think actually post a recent deal it's going to be well over 80% of the profits, now come from the travel business. The travel business are Smith's branches in airports and train stations and hospitals and stuff like that.
What percentage?
It's coming up towards 80% of the profitability. And it's been deepened by the fact they've done a big deal in the States recently, a company called InMotion, which you may have seen if you've travelled to the States in various airports. Mm-hmm. If you like, they're the WH Smith equivalent in many US airports, and a very, very complementary business. Smith's has a number of branches in, I think it's 28 countries around the world. Obviously, the UK is the most important, but it's got, like, if you go to various other European or Middle East or Asian geographies, you'll often see a WH Smith's in some of the big airports or related. But this has been deepened by this US purchase last October. Anyhow, numbers are out today, interim numbers, same old usual profile. The high street's still declining for them. It wasn't a complete washout, but it was a 2% like-for-like sales decline. The travel business was up 3% like-for-like sales increase, so you can see that it's still shifting even more towards travel, which all sounds fine, but obviously they're having to work hard to have one area offset the other. Interim profitability actually was pretty flat year on year. I think it was technically down 1%, but there are a few wiggles in that. Bottom line is Smith's is becoming a business where the high street's becoming much less relevant for them. Travel is where everything is. And obviously, thematically, as we all travel more, or the world, you know, potentially, unless certain politicians, I guess, intervene aggressively, becomes a smaller place and people do continue to travel more and more. In theory, that's a good position to be in, because my observation is there tends to be only one sort of news agent type place in each airport terminal. And, you know, you go into Smith's in various airports, you put a 10 or 20 quid down on the table, you don't get too much for your money, but there you go.
Where they've got competition, they can't handle it, and where they've got little competition, but they've managed to get their foot in the door there, because in airports you only get them or maybe another one like them selling magazines and books. They're okay in that situation, but a bit of competition, they can't deal with it, you know,
because the reality is on the high street you have Smith's. Again, is it a business that you would create today? Well, you know, the focus of Smith's
we said this about Debenhams, haven't we,
Precisely. And you know, newspapers is, you know, you and I remember when newspapers were gospel, you know, probably delivered them like I did back in the day. But who delivers newspapers nowadays, apart from the free sheets that come around, local stuff? You know, the national newspapers, most of it's online. People don't need to go to Smith's for their newspapers so much. They might go for sweets or the lottery or books maybe, but it's not, you know, there are other shops you can go to for those. And therein lies the issue in the high street. Now, if you've got a captive audience in an airport or maybe a train station, it's a different backdrop. And of course, half the skill of business is finding those, if you like, distribution and marketing capabilities where, you know, you can actually, if you like, take advantage of that sort of strong incumbent position. And you're right, Justin, in the airports, in the travel segment, they've got that, you know, by hook or by crook, they've got that. Whilst in the high street, it's a lot harder. So for me, when I'm looking at it as a stock, it's kind of interesting that that's shifting so aggressively towards the travel business. From a sort of a business school perspective, that's a smart thing to do. The question is, would you buy the shares? I took a look at the numbers today. as I said, profits were flattish, but travel was still growing. They're still generating cash. They pay a 3.5% dividend, which isn't shabby. If you take a look at the share price chart, I think it tells you everything you need to know. 20 quid is a big resistance support level. Mm-hmm. They've popped above that in recent weeks. I see no reason to chase the shares up here. Yeah. I like the strategy, but the numbers are not quite there for me yet. A slipping below 20 quid, or if you like, something which potentially impacts perceptions towards travel. I don't know, an avian flu outbreak, or people getting a bit grumpy about global diplomacy or related something which potentially causes people to sell off travel stocks may impact this one and may provide an opportunity. But what I do observe is great cash flow from the business still, and it has evolved, and I think it's evolved to survive effectively.
Yeah. I mean, they're a double dip on the chart. I mean, the last quarter of last year and the start, last quarter of last year, and it hit sort of £17. But it hasn't been down there for a while. But, like I say, it's nearing the top of its range, or nearly at the top of its range. So, yeah, I wouldn't pile in here. Marvellous. Anything else, Chris?
Well, quick one on Ted Baker. Mm-hmm. Ted Baker, of two issues with them, two statements out today. The first was that the new CEO has been appointed, but it's actually the acting CEO who's worked for the company in a couple of senior capacities, CFO and COO, in recent years. So an internal transfer, if you like, or a confirmation appointment there. So good luck to the woman involved. Hopefully she'll do a great job. So that's I guess good for shareholders. Better to have clarity about senior executives. The second one, probably more controversial, no doubt we'll get more newspaper column inches in the next couple of days, is that they've sort of drawn a line under the internal inquiry. You recall that the founder, that the ex sort of chair and CEO of the company, there was, what was it, Huggate, and various other
really
allegations.
Odd. Ray Kelvin, his name was. Apparently, you wouldn't see much of his face on Google. He used to cover his face up all the time, and he's just a strange guy by the sounds of it. Odd behaviour, you know?
That's it. And obviously people think Ted Baker is the sort of the head, but of course this Ray was the inspiration of the brand. Ted Baker's a fictional character, it's just sort of a concept of the person who maybe would want to shop in the stores or something like that. But you're right, Justin, he was an unusual guy, but you've got to say a very talented retailer based on what Ted Baker's done over the last decade or so. Anyhow, for one reason or another, the allegations were not proved. He certainly doesn't agree with the criticism, but by the sound of it, an agreement's sort of been forged. The inquiry has occurred. The inquiry has certainly suggested internal changes to Ted Baker policies, but it's kind of it's worded very carefully by lawyers, effectively saying, look, we see that Ray has said that he thinks the allegations are false, and they've kind of drawn a line under it. Some will say they've sort of swept everything under the carpet. What I would observe is they're just trying to crack on. They're trying to move on from this, and the appointment or the confirmation of the new CEO is part of this. They've updated their internal policies, which can only be a good thing, let's face it, and they're moving on in obviously what is still a tough retail environment. So the shares are sort of shrugged their shoulders and all of that today. I observe with this one, number one is the last couple of trading updates were disappointing. So I think that if I was the new confirmed CEO, I'd be making sure that to get expectations nice and low for future sort of publications and appraisal. So I kind of feel that the risks to this one are still on the downside. I also note that the share has bounced off a couple of times off the 14 quid level, and so it would be below that level I'd be a bit more interested. So keep an eye on this one. They do seem to have a bit of resonance and links with customers, and certainly do have a decent international strategy potentially, but obviously a company going through change. I don't think you need to worry about it until it's below 14 quid, or at least have updated under the full stewardship of the new CEO. But a couple of updates today.
Yeah, well, when they came online at first listed, I mean, they couldn't do anything wrong. And look at the chart, they have a list about 6 quid there in 2010, and literally it started, started okay, quite calmly, and then it really started to take off in 2011. And by 2016, it was up £36. So six bagged already, you know, pretty much. And then it faltered a little bit, double top at £30, and now it's down to £14. So almost like in between that top middle. So, yeah, who knows? Like you say, it all depends. That guy's gone, Ray, but he obviously did have a flair. Not flair.
That's right.
Today, pretty
that's right.
As well. He had a flair for it, but yeah, who knows where it goes from here? It depends on the people who run it, doesn't it? If they can get the right market and hit the right market, they'd be fine, but it's quite hard in this environment, you know?
It is. And you look at something like Superdry, you know, they've got the reverse problem. They've had the co-founder come back.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, if I was him, I would make, you know, probably they've got inventory write-downs or whatever else they've got to do. I'd hit the numbers hard first time, get those expectations nice and low, and then crack on from there. So, yeah, we'll have to see. But you're right, Justin. Ultimately, this is a tough old market. You know, you look at the ASOS numbers yesterday, a company focused online, which should be the growth part of the business, and obviously they're going through teething issues and everything else, despite obviously having a much better underlying growth. There's still issues out there. So it isn't easy, unsurprisingly.
You know, that's interesting, the way, you know, when, if you are a new CEO and you come and you do the kitchen sink, it just really put out something so gloomy. It's unbelievable. You know, everyone sells. And so anything you do, if you sell one shirt, you know, people, wow, they sold a shirt. It's fantastic. You know, so you can be so gloomy, I suppose, can't you, when you first come in? And it's fine. Say, listen, the next four quarters, we're not going to sell anything. And then anything is a bonus then, isn't it? I suppose. And that's it. It's an art, probably. It's being, you know, really writing the gloomiest outlook you can. There's an art to that, probably. And seeing how low you can get the stock price, then all of a sudden, anything's a bonus, you know?
I say you get a free hit. Look, no one's going to hassle you on your first numbers publication if you'd taken over 2 months ago. Mm-hmm. You know, what you should do is say, right, I'm going to announce, you should announce a review when you get appointed.
Yeah.
And then you should hit it hard. Inventory write-downs, restructuring costs, whatever your vision is, you'll be judged over the next 30 months, let's say, in terms of how that vision pans out. But you've got a free hit first time around.
Yeah.
If you'd wait until it's 6 months into your tenure, you know, that's half you if you're looking at a 4 year numbers. And I know business are hard, but that's the reality. So you're right. Investor psychology being what it is, hit it hard, get expectations nice and low, and then start that process of beating them and raising your own credibility. Ultimately, you need a plan, but it's always easier if you're kind of pushing on an open door.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, plan like you say, after a month coming, do all that, write down inventory, say it's bad, then do a further, in 3 months' time, do another update saying, it's worse than we thought. Carry on. And then hopefully then, you know, in 6 months, you could have some kind of positivity coming through and people say, oh, he's turning it around. Cool.
Precisely.
What's anything else, Chris, out there?
Well, a very quick final one. A couple of bits of geek maths here. Reckitt Ben Keys got hit yesterday because of the individual spin-off 4 or 5 years ago from the Reckitt's business. Obviously, has been hauled over the coals by the US authorities on a variety of allegations. I see all the potential numbers rolling around. Reckitt's shares, I reckon, fell the equivalent of around about $3 billion equivalent market cap yesterday, which I think a bit rude given they might not be obligated at all to stick anything and they've got a provision there already, and even they do have to pick up a bit of a bill, they're not going to pick up the whole lot, which has been mooted to be a $3 billion fine. So I think Reckitt's below £60 where they fell yesterday is actually looking quite interesting. So if people are selling Reckitt shares because of what their ex unit individual has been alleged to have been doing, I think they're missing the point, you know. So for me, I'm looking at that one because that feels like a bit of an overreaction on individual, although I think you it's so complex, I think you give that one a wide berth. But Reckitt's, take a look at it.
Yeah, I saw a lot of people jumping on trade, you know, people like Catch Falling Knives yesterday jumping on Indivia. First and foremost, they need to change their name, rebrand anyway, because now it's tarnished. And that name is so stupid. I've heard so many different pronunciations of it. I get stuck in it several, I have to actually look at the word to try and say it properly. Rebrand and change it. I saw some people trying to catch the falling knife yesterday, but it's up 2% today. Yesterday, down about sort of 70-odd% at one point. I think,
I know.
Isn't it?
Yes, that's right. Cool. There's no point. I mean, I think it's uninvestable. Let the news flow come to you. You might miss the first 10%, but at least you'll be investing with much more knowledge. Yeah. But Reckitt's, you know, because it got caught up in it, I think that's a bit rude. Have a look at that one, a bit more interesting.
Yeah, anything else, or is that all done?
No, I think we... Oh, the final thing, of course, is this whole interesting situation with Reynolds. I mean, it's not a stock that it's... You know, Reynolds, if those of you don't really know...
RNO,
it's
sort of
RNO, that's right. It's a smaller cap sort of chains, gears and couplings. That sounds a wonderful sort of engineering
sexy
style business. Yeah. Sexy. Yeah, real stuff, basically. None of this highfalutin services thing. Yeah. But it's interesting. It announced today that it's actually shifting from the main market to AIM.
Why do
and
they
I thought
do
that
this?
Was quite interesting. Yeah. Well, they said they're doing it to give them more flexibility to, initiate their change and restructuring program and whatever else. I think it's all about costs because ultimately I think any company, they're capitalized at 60 and change million quid. I think it's all about listing costs and everything else. And probably the fact is they haven't got many big institutional investors who aren't going to be too fussed if they shift to the AIM market. So I think this is a cost thing. And, watch out for other sort of companies which perhaps have gone through difficult times, smaller market caps, not maybe doing the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, when it comes down to it, I mean, the AIM market was set up for companies who don't need to show they've got a year's worth of loads of earnings and profit and all that stuff. So it's to raise capital to get these startup companies going, wasn't it? So the costs weren't as burdensome, to get them going. So that was the whole thing. So I suppose it is about costs, isn't it, at the end of the day,
Yeah, I think that's right. And, main market listings are good for credibility and for a bigger companies, fine. But once you get below that 100 million level and once you're on that sort of in the whole life cycle business on the wane, Reynolds is never going to be a mega 500, million market cap business. It might go up a bit. It might go down a bit. But, that's the way it is. It's not going to double or triple, I don't think. That's my perception in any case. So for them, it's all about we've got shareholders. They're probably able to buy AIM shares because otherwise they probably wouldn't be investing in a 60 odd million quid market cap company today in any case. And so for them, I think it's all about the costs. And I don't know the precise numbers, but certainly it is cheaper. There's less regulatory burden. And I think for Reynolds, that would be a blessed relief.
Yeah, absolutely. RNO. Cheers, Chris. And we'll catch up next week, fella.
Sounds a plan. See you then.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. Bidstack Group, BIDS. It's still romping, up 8% a day at 17 pence now. I was talking about this company at 5 pence. And listen, no stock price goes straight up. There's always a pullback. But I tell you what, I'll be buying more of this when it comes back because I think the company they're building here, I genuinely think, and I've said this several times, I'm not trying to ramp it because I haven't sold shares. I just hold them and I buy more on dips. I'm trying to acquire more of a decent company. I genuinely think this could be a proper profit-generating FTSE 250 company in the next 3 to 5 years. You have to do a lot of research and look into the future to see that, but it's there. The size of the prize is there, honestly. The people they're hooking up with from massive companies wouldn't be hooking up with this company unless it had lots of potential. So it's never too late to invest in a decent company, but do your own research, not investment advice. I may be way off the mark here, but I like BIDS. Really think it's an exciting company. I also like Nuformix, NFX. Chat to Dr. Dan Gooding yesterday on the podcast, and I think I'll be covering those. I dipped my toe in there, and I quite like their low-risk model and potential. Also, I've done a video on this company. At three, it's Xeros Technology, water-saving technology, plastic reduction technology. I like it a lot. They've got a tricky year to get through, tricky finals to get through the end of this month, but I think that's the turning point. At two, people trying to catch a falling knife there, Indivia. I covered that with Chris Bailey. And number one, Pathfinder Minerals. So what's this? PFP is the ticker there. I don't really know the story. I saw people trading it. It's not for me. I'm not a dirty trader. Okay. Unless I have to be in certain times. Let's go for the top five most liked RNSs. At five, Tuple. Update on trading and date of interim results. Some good results there from Tuple there. Bidstack Group. At four, appointment of non-executive director. That was a biggie yesterday. Mike Hayes, he was head of Europe and America for Sega. And he worked for Nintendo as well. At three, it is Vast Resources update. Never put the name in the RNS there. At two, Horizonte Minerals, posting of annual report and notice of AGM. And number one, most liked RNS, was from UK Oil and Gas. So the landmark 15,000 barrels of Portland oil reached at Horse Hill. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Discover the life-changing benefits of Meow Greens for your cat. Ever see your cat slowing down or having health issues and wonder, what can I do to make them better? Well, my friend, add Meow Greens to your cat's food for 90 days, and I guarantee you'll see changes that will amaze you. Greetings, I'm naturopathic Dr. Dennis Black, inventor of Meow Greens, and I invite you to take the Meow Greens 90-Day Challenge. In the first 30 days, you'll see shinier coats and increased energy. By day 60, your cat will have a stronger immune system, less shedding, improved joint function, all due to the live nutrients that you've added to their diet. And at 90 days, they're going to have better digestion, reduced inflammation, improved heart health, and you may even have reduced their cancer risk. Fetch a free Jumpstart trial bag for your cat today. Go to trymeowgreens.com. Use promo code TRYMEOW. That's TRYMEOW. You discover the shipping. You don't have to change your cat's food to improve your cat's health. Just add a packet of Meow Greens.